ship oil to Israel, continuing to support the Israeli state even while they are perpetuating this genocide against the Palestinian people. And two-thirds of that oil, two-thirds of the oil being shipped to Israel is being shipped by, is oil coming from private and investor-owned companies, such as Exxon, Chevron, BP, as we've mentioned. These are the arsonists of global warming, but also driving war and conflict around the world. And I think it's important for the countries and companies noted in this report, in our update, to recognize their liability as well. We've heard from others on this program and beyond about the ICJ's, the International Court of Justice's, ruling of a plausible genocide that's occurring. That opens up significant liability for these companies and countries, and we wanted to get this data out there, make it clear that things have not changed in the last few months, despite that ruling from the ICJ and despite incredible resistance from around the world.
I'm going to give the last word to Tara Hausko. What do you want to hear Kamala Harris say as she accepts the presidential nomination tonight from the Democratic Party? We have just like 30 seconds.
I want to hear Kamala Harris say the words that she is actually open to an arms embargo to actually stop the genocide in Gaza from unfolding. Saying ceasefire over and over again as the goalposts continue to shift just isn't enough. I want her to say that she is going to directly and unequivocally address the climate crisis with actions, not just words.
Tara Hausko, we want to thank you for being with us, Indigenous lawyer, activist, founder of the Gnu Collective, speaking to us from the White Earth Reservation in Minnesota. Colin Reese of Oil Change US will link to your report. And Michael Mann, climate scientist and professor at the University of Pennsylvania. We will also link to your article on Project 2025. That does it for our show. We've expanded to 2 hours every day here at the Democratic Convention. Check out our shows at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Ermin Sheikh from Chicago.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, reaction from some of the Northwest's top elected leaders at the Democratic National Convention as Kamala Harris gets ready for the speech of her life. If it seems to you that wildfires are getting worse, an expert who studies them says you're right. And a closer look at how ranked choice voting worked in Washington's recent state primary. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. I am Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. This is shaping up to be a wildfire season like no other, especially in Oregon and throughout the Pacific Northwest. Right now, in the Northwest region, there are at least 36 incidents burning on more than 923,000 acres, more than any other region in the country. More than 9,700 people are trying to stop these fires from wrecking lives and homes. And across the country, wildfires are ravaging more than 1.9 million acres, with about 21,000 people working on them. At NASA, a wildfire expert is using technology like satellites to track wildfires. Her name is Liz Hoy.
Are wildfires getting worse? Yes, unfortunately they are. We're seeing increases in the intensity and the severity, the overall burned area of wildfires, and the duration of fire across the fire season. And while fire is a natural part of ecosystems, what's really driving this change is we're seeing a lot of changes in our climate. We're seeing increases in global temperature, as well as more extreme weather events, so longer droughts. And so we have these hot and dry conditions, which makes vegetation, forests, and grasses more available to burn because they're drier. And so with these drier conditions and these drier fuels, we're likely to see more fires. And this is happening in many locations all across the world. This can be really detrimental to the ecosystem, but also to human health, where we're seeing people going to the hospital with respiratory issues, and smoke can just travel many thousands of miles with these fires. NASA continues to study wildfires around the globe. We have people going out on the land to make measurements. We have airborne campaigns that fly around to better understand wildfires from the air. how it's impacting smoke, where wildfires are burning. And then we have satellite imagery, which gives us a global picture of wildfires all around the world all the time.
And that's NASA wildfire expert Liz Hoy. And as wildfires become longer lasting and more frequent across the Pacific Northwest, exposure to their smoke is linked to a higher risk of heart attacks, stroke, lung cancer, and a decline of cognitive function. Erica Lottis talks to an expert about how to breathe easier, even during bad air quality days.
Wildfires are becoming bigger and more frequent across the West, and health experts are offering tips to breathe easy even during bad air quality days. Health pulmonary physician Dr. Anuj Mehta says pregnant women, infants, children, older adults, and people with heart or lung disease are most at risk.
Wildfire smoke has a lot of particulate matter, so really small, like microscopic particles that can cause inflammation in the lungs. Just breathing in that particulate matter, that inflammation may not just stay in your lungs. It can really cause inflammation around your body.
Exposure to smoke from wildfires has been linked to an increased risk of heart attack, stroke, lung cancer, and a decline in cognitive function. Using air purifiers with HEPA filters and high MERV rated air conditioning filters can improve indoor air quality. Limiting strenuous activities is also a good idea because when your breathing rate goes up, you inhale more particulates. Workers and others who need to be outdoors can get air quality updates on particulate matter and ozone pollution levels online at colorado.gov/air quality. Mehta says N95 masks and respirators can also help if worn correctly.
If you can be indoors, that's going to be really good. If you have to be outdoors and you're somebody with underlying breathing problems, wearing a mask actually can reduce the amount of particulate matter or smoke matter that you're going to breathe in.
And as humans continue to burn fossil fuels, wildfire risks are widely expected to increase into the foreseeable future. Mehta says it's important to understand the risks and to be prepared.
So every summer, we're going to be dealing with bad air quality days. And so people, especially people with underlying health concerns, should be discussing with their medical teams about a bad air quality plan.
This is Eric Galatis.
Oregon and Washington leaders are at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. During the roll call of states, Oregon Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley and Washington Democratic Chair Shasti Conrad had their chances to speak up for their state's presidential delegates and make some history.
Oregon, how do you cast your vote?
From the first state in the nation to hold a presidential election with all mail-in voting, Oregon is proud to protect voting rights in America.
And Haley, from the heart of the beautiful Pacific Northwest, Oregon protects our planet and fights for LGBTQ equality.
And where we believe that reproductive rights are human rights, Oregon casts 78 votes for Kamala Harris.
Washington, how do you cast your vote?
From the amber waves of grain and burning origins of eastern Washington to the iconic waters of the St. Washington stands proud as a part of the Blue Walls. I, the first South Asian woman leading a state party, am honored to pledge 9 votes present and a lucky 101 votes for Vice President Kamala Davey Harris.
Oregon's senior U.S. Senator has been very busy at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, but he took a couple moments to check in with us. Hello, Senator. How's it going?
Hey, Annette. A little short of sleep, but it's been good to see all this excitement.
I saw you speaking at the roll call of the states for Oregon. What was that experience like? That must have been very exciting. And have you done that before?
It was. Done it once before, but this was particularly exciting because I thought Tim Walz's presentation yesterday was first rate, and I especially liked the fact that we had all the players come on. Basketball was my game. I went to school on a basketball scholarship. They were talking about football, but the same principle is involved, and that is that sports is a team sport, and government is as well, and we were all excited about getting out there and getting out the emails and the texts and knocking on doors and spreading the word.
You had a chance to brag on Oregon's mail-in ballot system a bit there.
And why was that an important message for you to get out?
I'm the first person to ever be in a Senate election that was all vote by mail. And Oregonians know that I'm a Democrat. What is not remembered so much is the second person to be elected in an all mail-in election was my friend Gordon Smith. And so right out of the gate, we established that we were going to put a real focus on bipartisanship. And I've seen some people on the far right saying, oh, this is not a good way to go, and this is not a sensible approach and the like. But Oregon's first two choices, one was a Democrat and one was a Republican, who got along very well together during Senator Smith's service.
I wonder how the election would be different if everybody had a mail-in voting system the way Oregon...
Well, guess what? I've been introducing legislation to take the Oregon vote-by-mail system national. Mm-hmm. And we're going to stay at it till we get it done. It's another example of the Oregon way.
Yeah. What else have you been doing there, and what else do you plan to be doing there?
We are with the delegation, Senator Merkley and I, and today there have been a lot of requests in terms of the vice president's involvement with food policy and price gouging. And just so your listeners know, I want people to know, as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, where this will go, I continue to be a supporter of the marketplace and marketplace forces. That's the first choice. If, however, there are some shortcomings in the marketplace, and that happens from time to time, there need to be some guardrails to protect consumers. And people have been asking about it today, and I think it reflects a kind of common sense approach. I was interested last night. Oprah spoke. I didn't know until she made her comments that she is an independent. And what she was talking about was she wanted approaches that were common sense. And I think what I just described to you on food, using the marketplace to the greatest extent possible, but having some guardrails to protect consumers, is also common sense, and I hope it will appeal to independents and people all across the political spectrum.
You mentioned Oprah and you mentioned Tim Walz's speech. Were there any other moments that stood out to you as, wow, great moments at this convention so far?
Clearly, the Obamas and the Clintons haven't lost the magic, because they all gave terrific speeches. Tim Walz was particularly enjoyable because we hadn't seen him really in that kind of role. I gotten to meet him, but wouldn't profess to say I've worked with him 20 or 25 times or something. And so it was really good to see that. And as I say, I enjoyed Oprah's remarks in a number of areas, but I did not know until last night that she was a political independent and she was speaking to independents.
Very interesting. Now, if you were able to give her your best advice as the political veteran you are, what messages do you think that Kamala Harris needs to highlight in her campaign to be the next president of the United States?
We're putting the focus on those issues where the second word is bill. It might be medical bill. It might be housing bill. It might be education bill. It might be gas bill. But she's really focused on working class people. And the contrast could not be more clear. I've been pointing out that Donald Trump wants all these tariffs. These tariffs are basically taxes on working people who are going to buy a car or food or school supplies or something like that. We're saying we want a tax system that gives everybody in America the chance to get ahead, not just the person at the top. I think those are the kinds of issues the vice president's going to run on, and that's why she's going to win.
How does this convention compare to past ones? I know you're a veteran of this whole scene, especially with a new nominee stepping in pretty recently. How is it so different from what's happened?
We've never seen anything like it. And of course, it's also different in the sense that the digital role is so dominant. You see it in everything in terms of the meetings and the way we get the word out about various kinds of issues, and how fast the velocity of activity is so dramatic. We do more in 20 minutes than you used to spend a whole day on almost.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about the demand for a Palestinian speaker to be allowed at the convention? What do you think about that?
I'm not up on all of the negotiations. What I'm trying to do, though, Annette, is I'm chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and I'm trying to do everything I can to promote there a two-state solution that would really give us a chance to focus on priority issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing the part about the parents about one of the hostages was speaking from October 7th, and you could just feel their pain, but they were saying they were asking for both to return the hostages and also to end the war and the fighting, and it's still going on. And I know you've been deeply involved and you've movingly spoken about that in the past. Any thoughts about it? I know the vice president and the president have been talking about trying to come up with a solution. Any thoughts on how that's going?
Bill Burns, the CIA chief, can get a peace agreement out of this. The negotiations have been almost around the clock. He deserves some kind of Nobel Prize or something. But I continue to believe you have to see this through the prism of a Jewish mom and a Palestinian mom. And the reality is, Bibi Netanyahu and Hamas have not been a constructive force in many respects. And as a Jew, I never thought that what happened in October would be something that would be repeated after the Holocaust. And we've got to come up with a plan that allows Israelis and Palestinians to exist and coexist.
Yeah. There was a Washington congresswoman whose speech I caught yesterday, Susan DeBene, was talking about trying to get more people elected who are of the Democratic Party, of course, in Congress. And that affects you on the Senate side, too. Can you give us your thoughts about this upcoming election? And it's going to be tight, right?
A lot of people thought there was no way we'd be in the majority in 2025. But I'm telling you, a lot of our races that have been close, our candidates have been terrific. Sherrod Brown of Ohio, John Tester of Montana, Jackie Rosen of Nevada. We've got some, Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. We've got some terrific people, and they're doing really well in their races.
Thank you so very much. I really appreciate it.
Please enjoy talking. Let's do it again soon.
I hope so. Yes, that would be great. Have a good time.
You will.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. And that's Oregon Senior U.S. Senator Ron Wyden from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Along with Oprah, the Clintons, the Obamas, and vice presidential candidate Tim Walz, a Washington State congresswoman had her chance at center stage at the DNC in Chicago. The First District's Susan DeBene is also the chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, trying to help the Democrats win back a majority this fall. Along with Oprah, the Clintons, the Obamas, and vice presidential candidate Tim Walz, a Washington State congresswoman had her chance at center stage at the DNC in Chicago. The First District's Susan DeBene is also the chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, trying to help the Democrats win back a majority this fall.
It is my honor to represent the great state of Washington and to lead the House Democrats' work to take back the majority. As I travel the country, I hear the same thing. People want governance that works. They don't want tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy, not a national abortion ban, or more chaos and dysfunction, or blind loyalty to Trump. They don't want Republicans in charge. We're here because we need to elect Vice President Harris and Governor Walz. And giving them a Democratic Congress is how we turn promises into progress. A Democratic majority means lowering costs and growing the middle class, expanding the child tax credit and making it permanent, protecting reproductive freedom. A Democratic House means Speaker Jeffries will certify the 2024 election. We need just four more seats to take back the majority. We have fantastic candidates in winnable districts all across the country. In battleground states like Michigan and Arizona, in blue states like New York and California, and even in states like Iowa and Nebraska. And we're going to make history by picking up a seat in the state where I was born, Alabama. In 2022, we came within 7,000 votes of the majority. It's within our power to win these critical races. This election is about our rights, our freedoms, our democracy, and our future. So let's get out the vote. Let's take back the House. Let's make Hakeem Jeffries our next speaker. And let's send Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to the White House.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with Heather from Albina Neighbors about their upcoming block party event this weekend. Then we'll speak with Laura Grimes from Oregon Art Watch about an opinion piece she wrote this month detailing all the arts community has at stake in the upcoming Portland City Council election. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, rain moving in down to a low of 58. Tomorrow's weather, rain early, then cloudy with showers in the afternoon, a high of 63. Today in history, on this date in 1972, 3,000 demonstrators disrupted the Republican National Convention in Miami Beach. Hundreds were arrested or injured protesting the Vietnam War. Our quote of the day is from Ron Kovich, an injured Marine sergeant in a wheelchair at the head of their march. We're tired of a government that has lied to us, that sent us off to a war and forgot about us when we came home. You've lied to us too long. You burned too many babies. You may have taken our bodies, but you haven't taken our minds. In Washington state, ranked choice voting is in the spotlight. As Eric Tegenoff tells us, this comes after vote splitting in the Washington state primary election held on August 6th.
The Commissioner of Public Lands race is still too close to call more than 2 weeks after the election and could be heading for a recount. It's a top two primary, meaning the two highest vote getters will go on to the general election. Tony Ivey with Washington Conservation Action says that's created an odd situation where the majority of Washingtonians voted for Democratic candidates, but two Republicans could face off in November.
We became very concerned about the potential of vote splitting, and while Washington voters heavily support climate-friendly candidates and heavily support climate action, we end up with a situation where, despite the majority of voters selecting a climate-friendly candidate, two non-climate-friendly candidates could end up in the general election.
Ivey says this could have been avoided by using a choice voting system that would have let voters rank the candidates who aligned with their views. Ranked choice voting is catching on across the country, including in Washington, where Seattle will implement this system in city primary elections in 2027. Neelu Jenks with Fair Vote Washington says not every city or county in the state can do this, which is why her organization has been pushing the legislature to pass a local options bill. She says a ranked choice system would engage more voters.
In a time when we're finding voter participation is dropping, I hope to see more people embrace ranked choice voting so, one, we can avoid vote splitting and see people preferences actually show up on the general ballot, but two, where voters feel like their voice matters.
Ranked choice voting has faced opposition, including from Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, who says the system is too confusing and would create accessibility issues. But Ivey rejects this assessment, saying ranked choice would actually do the opposite.
What we see is that ranked choice voting makes our system more democratic. It better reflects the will of the voters, and it's very easy.
I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz accepts the Democrats' vice presidential nomination. Uncommitted delegates protest after a request for a Palestinian-American speaker is denied. And many LGBTQ plus folks say their rights would be in danger if former President Trump is reelected. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
Fourth quarter! We're down a field goal, but we're on offense and we've got the ball. We're driving down the field.
Governor Tim Walz accepting the Democratic nomination for vice president. The former football coach showcased his Midwest roots in a rousing, folksy speech, saying the golden rule for personal decisions in Minnesota is mind your own damn business. Former President Bill Clinton also cracked wise, saying even after his recent 78th birthday, he's still younger than former President Donald Trump, but Clinton stressed that in spite of the joy they feel, Democrats can't get comfortable.
You should never underestimate your adversary. And these people are really good at distracting us, at triggering doubt.
The convention has featured prominent Republicans, even former Trump staffers, who are publicly backing Vice President Kamala Harris, as did one of the country's most famous registered independents in a backhand dig at Trump. Oprah Winfrey spoke specifically to purple voters.
I'm calling on all you independents and all you undecided. You know this is true. You know I'm telling you the truth, that values and character matter most of all.
Press reports say independent presidential hopeful Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will leave the race and endorse Trump. No decision has been announced, but both men will be in Arizona on Friday. Uncommitted Democratic delegates requested a Palestinian-American convention speaker. After that was denied, many staged a sit-in outside of the United Center. Michigan delegate Abbas Alawiya says they plan to protest until heard on the war in Gaza.
As soon as I get the call saying that they'll allow a Palestinian-American speaker from this stage, which I think would be very reasonable, then I want to go home. Until then, we'll be right here.
In their convention speeches, two important gay Democrats warned about threats to LGBTQ plus rights. Colorado Governor Jared Polis and Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg are both in same-sex marriages. But Buttigieg says rights many people now take for granted could be at risk.
As the destruction of the right to choose in this country has shown us, no right that has already been gained is secure.
A new Economist YouGov poll shows Harris has the support of more than half of registered women voters. Carmen Bell is a Black delegate from Pennsylvania and says those in favor of reproductive rights will put Harris in the White House.
Everyone should have body autonomy. So no one should be telling us when we should end pregnancies or when we should use IVF or when we should take birth control.
I'm Alex Gonzalez.
A new report from the Every Library Institute is raising concern about what could happen to libraries under Project 2025. Mark Moran has the story.
The Republican Party's agenda, as outlined in the document known as Project 2025, takes aim at places where students can read, discover, and explore. Conservatives call it a matter of accountability. Peter Bromberg with the Institute says Project 2025, a massive effort to reclassify civil service workers as political appointees, would take direct aim at libraries and the people who work there.
Librarians and teachers are highly trusted and well-known and well-loved in their communities. It's really a shocking and extreme attempt to twist our democratic society and our institutions into more of a totalitarian theocracy.
But backers of Project 2025 say librarians need to be held accountable for what's on their shelves. A bill in Alabama that would have criminalized librarians for allowing content defined as obscene narrowly missed becoming law this year. A similar measure's already been filed for next session. Bromberg says Project 2025 promotes book bans, restricts LGBTQ content, and undermines the intellectual freedom and inclusivity that libraries are known for. He believes that would ultimately threaten students' educational quality and could presage the end of libraries serving as open and inclusive spaces for people who want to learn. He cites book bans as an example.
Americans are increasingly becoming aware of what's happening and organizing, and it doesn't often take very much in terms of organizing and pushback on whether it's school boards or county councils to get the books back on the shelves.
This is Mark Moran.
Native delegates are prioritizing treaty obligations for the next presidential administration. And a new radio documentary exposes a saga with the brother of a former Utah governor. With that story and more, here's today's edition of National Native News with Brian Bull from Medford, Oregon.
Vice President Kamala Harris will officially accept her party's nomination for president at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz formally accepted his nomination for vice president Wednesday. Antonia Gonzalez reports, Native Americans at the DNC say it's important for the next administration to keep the federal government's trust and treaty obligations.
Native people at the DNC say there are a number of tribal issues that need to be addressed by the next administration. Dwayne Duffy is the vice president of the Mescalero Apache tribe in New Mexico.
We want to see an investment in Head Start facilities, Head Start education, getting the federal government to honor and respect the treaties that were signed and that trust responsibility owed to the tribal governments and tribal citizens.
Kansas delegate Carol Kadu Blackwood says she'd like the next administration to further Interior Secretary Deb Haaland's boarding school report, which investigated the troubled legacy of federal Indian boarding schools.
I would like to see someone to support, enforce, endorse the Indian boarding school report. And Deb Haaland's recommendations is that schools should teach Native American curriculum. That's history, culture, language.
Ellen Williams, a member of the Native community in Chicago, says she'd like to see the next president and vice president make sure to protect the Indian Child Welfare Act, as the law, intended to keep Native children with Native families, continues to be challenged.
When people attack our families and our children, steal our children, remove our children, it's a way for genocide. If we can't keep our children, all of our love and all of our future is with our babies.
In her role as vice president, during remarks at the 2023 White House Tribal Nations Summit in Washington, D.C., Kamala Harris told tribal leaders she'll continue to defend the Indian Child Welfare Act. At the summit, Harris also recognized tribal sovereignty and told leaders she's committed to speaking truth about the horrors of federal Indian boarding schools and work on healing intergenerational trauma. This week, vice presidential candidate Minnesota Governor Tim Walz made an appearance at a Native caucus meeting. He acknowledged tribal sovereignty, saying, in Minnesota, it's about actions on every decision that needs to be done. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new episode of the public radio program Reveal explores the controversial adoption of a Northern Cheyenne child by a wealthy white family in Utah. Co-reporter Bernice Yearn says the saga started in 2017 when David Levitt, the politically connected brother of Utah's former governor Mike Levitt, traveled to the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Montana. A Native woman with connections to his wife's family was struggling and had a young child. Levitt thought he could help through adoption.
In that whole process, members of the child's Native family have raised concerns and have objected to the adoption. The story really looks at how well the Indian Child Welfare Act was followed.
The act is intended to keep Native families together, but relatives say after the mother was arrested and the child put in the care of the BIA, Levitts became a temporary guardian. Weeks later, the Levitts adopted the child against the wishes of the biological father and other Native relatives.
Another important aspect of this is the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Indian Student Placement Program. It's now a defunct program, but for nearly 50 years, students were taken from the reservation and placed in LDS family foster homes. And the aim was to educate children, but also, of course, assimilation and baptism.
The Reveal episode drops this Saturday. I'm Brian Bull from Eugene, Oregon.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Tegedoff, Eric Galatis, and Mark Moran. The producer's Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Senator Ron Wyden, Public News Service, and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available.